prepare for the worst.
That's where being the CPA and president of a bank helped. Right? I understand the cash flow and how to make money, how to preserve money, and how to be happy. But that's the thing is, you never get to the finish line, especially if you're an entrepreneur. You have to enjoy the process and you have to be able to celebrate small victories, because it could take, and if you don't, then it's easy to quit because you think, I'm never going to get there.
All right, guys, I'm here with a good friend named Peter. He's actually here in Atlanta, and we're going to learn some amazing stuff from real estate to how to network and honestly, much more. Peter, so thank you for coming.
Shane, I am excited to be here. I always love talking about real estate. I love many of the things that you're doing, and you know, the real estate community, I'm sure, is going to be very grateful for all of the way you're going to be positively affecting the lives of others. So thank you.
Thank you. No, it really means a lot that you're here. And a lot of people, honestly, that are going to be at our event in December and everything, they're going to come and they're not going to know what to do with you, right? Because you're full of energy. You can tell just in the hello. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So born and raised in Connecticut, came down, went to college, University of Georgia, and was there during the Herschel Walker years, won the national championship in 1980s. And my degree, I have an undergrad master's in accounting. I'm a CPA, started my work career at Price Waterhouse. And I always tease that, can you imagine me 40 years ago when I had five times this amount of energy in a little cubicle? And it was not a good fit. And so the first 2 years, I had to work to get my license. I passed the CPA exam in graduate school. Okay. And at day 2 years, turned in my notice. It was like I was in prison. I was X-ing that calendar. Mm-hmm. And next 20 years, I was in the banking world. I started as an auditor. Then I headed operations. Then I was the top loan officers. And by the end, I was president of the bank.
That's
so
amazing.
I love talking about business and whiteboarding. I saw you had a whiteboard in one of these rooms. I'm like, oh my God, that's like heaven to
me. We are business nerds. We love it.
Yeah. And that way you can figure out. So like when I mentor people and they have an idea, I love just whiteboarding. And, you know, it's a good background of accounting and business. And I finance many, many different companies. Did that for 20 years. Then I got into my entrepreneurial side, had a chance to run for 6 months. One of my customers that had a large commercial printing company did that. At the end, I bought it. In a year, I bought six other companies. So I had seven companies I was running, all needed printing. So I had vertical integration. That time I was working, I had a personal trainer because I need to stay healthy, you know, working 7 days a week, 100 hours, who was about 15 years younger. So he was like a little brother to me. And I said to him one day, like, Brian, what do you want to do when you grow up? And he said, I want to get into real estate investing. So I was like, okay, let's get started. Now, I thought I was going to do a little. I did not have a lot of free time. But my personality is, when I say I'm going to do a little, I don't know why I even say that. I'm either all in or all out. Mm-hmm. 8 months into our real estate investing, we were on our fourth flip. National television comes knocking at my door. And what most people know me for is I was a lead character here in Atlanta for 3 seasons for the first home flipping show, A&E's Flip This House. And I always say I'm 64 years old now, have enough energy for anybody, doesn't make a difference. But I have a Wikipedia page, my picture, my bio, my company, all on A&E's website. So that's why I know a lot of people, 2 million viewers a show.
It's amazing.
And, you know, I want to use like a mentoring moment here, which I always love
please.
Doing. So a lot of people said to me, you know, Peter, how could you be 8 months in and on your fourth flip? Like, you have to be the luckiest person in the world. So let's go back to, like, what did the network like about me? Well, I'm high energy. We just figured that part out, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine you being a CPA, like you said, just sitting back.
But there are a lot of high energy guys. What the network liked about me was that I was a CPA. I worked at Price Waterhouse, which is still probably the most, you know, exclusive and prestigious accounting firm in the world, and that I was president of a bank. So it just gave them credibility. So it wasn't the 8 months. It was the 25 years prior of the work that I did. So when people think you're going to have a success right to begin with, they don't take a look at all it took to get to where you are today as a more finished product, not finished.
You have a great personality too and great energy. So that mixed together, I'm sure.
It was great. And so after that, and TV ended, and I'm big about putting people together and building and nurturing relationships. And I started a networking event and just celebrated 14 years of doing a monthly event that we've only missed during the pandemic.
Wow. And can you tell everyone what the name of that place
is? It's Real Estate Connections. And so on Facebook, if somebody wants to friend me, I have a Real Estate Connection group. I wanted a community besides a live event. We have over 21,000 people in the group. And it's not just that there's 21,000 people. It's how engaging. So if people have questions, a lot of realtors put their open houses. Maybe they had an inspection. They need an electrician, a plumber, like all the things that they need. Or it's somebody new and they have a question. People pipe in. And so for me, it's exciting to see all of the help, all the jobs, all the businesses have been done. But it all starts with building and then nurturing the relationships.
100%. And honestly, one thing, I've been to a lot of real estate meetups, free and paid. And some people, don't get me wrong, you can meet some good people, but sometimes people are a little standoffish. But one thing about your event that I thought was really amazing, everyone was engaging, and those that weren't, you would go over there and grab them and make them meet someone.
100%. So one of the things that we do is when somebody, it's their first time, they get a green dot. And so if I don't know somebody, then I go up, introduce myself, and I find out who are they looking to meet in the room. Now, there are a lot of people who try to copy what I've done, which they everybody says that means it's a compliment.
It's a compliment.
But I think what most people miss is not just the night of the event. It's all the things that happen in between. Before COVID, I would do 100 one-on-one meetings. Well, that's it, 100. I meet everybody at the same place. It's a Dunkin' Donuts close to where I live because I go one meeting after another. David's experienced it. And I'm introducing people. So if somebody's coming, it's not that I just try to book them all at once. I try to figure out who would be, can I introduce you to that will be a good fit on there. And so now since the pandemic, I do about 30. So the more people I know, the more people I can help and connect.
Absolutely.
Right. And it's a marathon, not a sprint. And so I'm so passionate about, you know, building those relationships. And it's fun. So when somebody comes to the event, I'll ask them who they would like to meet. And that whole night, I'm putting them together.
Absolutely.
Because there are people that the first time they come, they're intimidated. It's bigger.
Introverts like me.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's important that they understand that somebody's going to help bring them together. And for my sponsors, like when you had a table, I came and I brought people to you, right?
That's right.
Because
That's
at the end of the day, I want my sponsors to feel value. And I know typically the types of people they're looking for. But one thing I always are conscious, whether it's the attendees or the sponsors, is consistency. You can't do something once or go into a room and think all of a sudden, just because you put money down, you're going to get something. You have to understand that it takes a while for people to know you. And it's like what do you want your brand to be known as, right? I mean, you want people to see you, and it's important that you have that vision of what you want. So if I said to you, Shane, and since this is interactive on here, what do you want your brand to be and people to know about you, what would that be?
I want them to know me as a real estate and business guy that likes to do win-win deals with other people.
I love that. And see, when you said that, like for me, like this picture like went in my mind. See, when somebody says, I want, let's say, to meet like everybody in a room, the problem with that is if you think about an easel, like it's empty. But if somebody says, I'm looking for ABC, like your mind starts ticking of who would be good people to introduce them to. So when you said win-win and some of the other things, like for me, you know, it gave me an idea of people that would be great for you to meet.
Yeah. So you have a really amazing Rolodex. I remember we pulled out our phones to see how many contacts. I had like 2,000 or 3,000. You had 22,000. And I thought it was neat. I said, how do you retain nurturing and keeping those relationships? Because you don't just like them. You love every single person. And I was very impressed with that.
So when I think I have 50,000 people in my personal database, right?
That's amazing.
So on LinkedIn, And I have to figure out if I'm going to teach you people this, the LinkedIn portion or not on there. That might have to be a second lesson. But on LinkedIn, I've got about 12,000. And then I've got close to 5,000 on Facebook, because for personal, 5,000 is the limit.
That's the limit, right. Yes, sir.
But like for your groups and pages, there's now I've got the 21,000. Mm-hmm. But then I've got about 20,000 in my phone. And so when you were like, well, how do you nurture? Well, one of the things that I do every day is I take 25 people and I send them a text. And it goes something like this. Shane, I was thinking about you today. I want you to know how grateful I am for you and our friendship. What can I do today to make it a better day for you? Mm. And what that does is, what am I trying to do? I'm trying to engage with people, right?
Yes.
So like if you got that, you're good at some point. It's just, you know, you're down that list on the 25. If you got that, like, what would you do with it?
Yeah, I would say, man, he thought of me. That's amazing. I need to reach out to him. Man, we need to grab lunch or something.
And what happens is, when you do that, you find out, like, what's happened since last time you know somebody. So, like, in the real estate world, maybe somebody got married. Maybe they're having a baby. Maybe fill in the blank. And when life changes happen, what they need and looking for have changed. So it gives you an opportunity to stay current with people. And when you stay current, that's a great way of nurturing relationships.
It rebonds the relationship.
Yeah.
No, I love that. And a lot of people miss that point of giving value too. So I like that you always doing the value piece. So, all right. So going aside from that, because I'm definitely going to come back to relationships. Okay. Because man, the energy is amazing. On the fix and flips that you've done, being on the TV show, how was your first deal? For those at home that have not ever done their first deal, how was your first deal?
So you're talking about for on TV or before TV?
Oh, before TV. Like, how was your first deal? How'd you feel? Was you nervous?
So, of course, if you're not nervous, then you're not, that's not normal. So one of the things on the first one, and this is just a philosophy I have kind of in life, is I wanted the scope to be small, because I didn't have a mentor back then. I just had to use my business background. Mm-hmm. And anytime you do something new, you don't know what you don't know.
That's right.
And so you're going to make mistakes. And so if your scope is smaller, hopefully the mistakes you made aren't going to put you out of business.
That'd be devastating.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so the first flip I did was in Hayville. So if you're familiar with Hayville, that used to be a very popular area for people that worked at the airport before we had Peachtree City. Like a lot of like the pilots and things now, Peachtree City is where they go. But back then, 20, 25 years ago, Hayville had a much more affluent background.
Okay.
And they have the first Chick-fil-A. It's the Dwarf House. So like
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So if you ever go to Hayville, you have got to have at the Dwarf House out there. It's fun. It's, you walk in, it's not like some of the other Chick-fil-A's you go to. And great milkshakes, by the way. They have a milkshake maker.
We're gonna go.
So here I am in Hayville, and typical in many parts of the city, it was a 1960 brick ranch. Mm-hmm. It was a 3-1. Mm-hmm. And so what I did with it, added a bathroom, and then it was an update in the kitchen. We always know the most important room that can make or break a deal is the kitchen on there. So we updated that and then like paint and made it more modern. Mm-hmm. But the only thing we changed, we didn't knock down walls. We didn't add square footage on there. Again, we added that bathroom. And, you know, a lot of times if you have a 3-1, and you're trying to do at a bathroom, it's a bump out in a closet in one of the bedrooms.
Yeah.
And so we did that. I think I paid about $140,000. I think it would cost about $30,000 or $35,000 to do it. And I don't know, I think it's been a long time. So I think we sold it for like $230,000 or $240,000. So it was quick.
A good win.
And didn't take that long because, and I would say this, the nice thing about Hayville was the city was easy to work with for permits. Whereas another deal, which was my third, was in East Point, and it was a similar. Okay. The houses were similar, but it was much harder.
Oh my god,
to work with the city down there, like it just really delayed. And of course, when you're making money on flip, every day you have a per diem for your loans and paying that interest.
That's right. That's
holding
right.
costs will make or break a deal on a flip, and 100%. It just really kind of cost. And I decided after that I wasn't going back to do any.
No more in East Point.
No more East Point.
Do you still do flips today?
Not a whole lot of flips. Okay. As I've gotten older, so now it's about rental properties and making money on that. And so,
can you tell us your first transition into rentals?
Yeah. So the first rental place I bought was in East Atlanta.
East Atlanta. Okay.
And what I liked about it was, and when I did a lot of flips, I used to do a lot in East Atlanta. So there's very few places in East Atlanta I have not flipped a home.
Oh, wow.
Now, the nicest parts is as you get closer to that village, East Atlanta Village, the properties are worth more and they're just, you have a lot more foot traffic in there. And so I looked at a rental property and of course you're looking for different things. At that point, you know, a lot of times when you're doing a rental, you don't want to put as much money on there. You want to just kind of like update and
rent ready,
yeah, which is different. Yes. It's different out there. Yes, and so, you know, it was great. I liked making money. As you get older, like what I need is different. And so I'm not looking to make the big bang on a flip. And I would tell you, one of the other reasons flips are harder now, not impossible, but harder, is since the pandemic, so many of the supplies or things that you needed, if they came overseas, take a lot longer on there. And the workforce, you know, I remember when I first started, we used a drywall, they had 25 people. And by the last time we used them, they had 3.
Wow.
And so it's true about the subs. And so it's a much different parameter out there. But, you know, with the rental properties I've done, anything from long-term rentals to Airbnbs. Right now, I'm big into PadSplit, which is renting by the rooms. You've got to pick the right area.
That's right. Can you explain what PadSplit is for those that don't know?
Sure. So PadSplit is you rent by the room.
Rent by room.
And so I have a duplex over in 30310, which I'll tell you a quick funny story. So when I started to do my first flip before I was on TV, I had bought a house on Venetian Way. And what I loved, the house, the architecture was very different in that 30310 than like East Atlanta or Hayfield or East Point. And it was a big 3,500 square foot house. And I loved it. The problem was at that point in time, there was a lot of mortgage fraud and a lot of different things. The number one zip code for mortgage fraud in the United States, not in Georgia, was 30310. So the problem was when I went to sell it, a lot of mortgage companies redlined that zip code, which means they didn't want to lend. Okay. And so when I finally sold it, what a lot of lenders did made people get 5 appraisals done on it.
5?
To make sure that people weren't in cahoots. So it took a little bit longer to sell that house. And now today, 30310 is just a great place to do. I've done a lot of things, but you know, sometimes you have to go during that period on there.
Yeah. There was that one guy, I forget what his name is, Michael something. I think his name was Michael. I may be saying it wrong, but I know he did a lot of mortgage fraud like 15, 20 years ago, where he took it like 10, 15 mortgages on one home at one time.
Yeah. And so craziness. But PadSplit is, the idea is you turn your common areas, except for you need the kitchen, you need your bathroom, but like living areas, you make them into bedrooms. Now, the nice thing about PadSplit is that if, let's say somebody leaves, you're still getting paid for all the other rooms. It's not all or nothing. So the cash flow is significantly better.
So you may, like 5 rooms, you might lose a fifth of the income, not 100%.
100%.
How do you do an eviction on a PadSplit on one person if they don't pay? I've never done it before. Yep. I've always just done, you know, long term.
Yeah.
But I've always been curious. How do you kick out one?
So here's how it works. They have a threshold of $300. Now, there's a lot of talk about, and a lot of the investors are trying to change this. But as of today, if they go over $300 that they owe and they pay by the week, or every other week, depending on how they get paid. They get to choose that ahead of time, right?
Okay.
You go over $300, they get a notice that they have basically 48 hours to bring it down under $300. If they don't, then you have the choice as the owner to like give them more time or not. So with my people, if they've had something that came up, they're asked for an extension. Mm-hmm. And I usually give it if it's reasonable on there. Mm-hmm. And so, but if they, let's say, didn't, and it's like anything else, mm-hmm. and they don't move, then it, you have to evict them. So it's similar to like if
just one room at a time.
Yeah.
Okay.
So but so I, knock on wood, I have not had to evict anybody.
That's great because you it looks like you have good communication.
We do on there. We keep up and there's certain things that mm-hmm. I do in my path that they don't. There's certain things you have to do and certain things that you don't. So here's a couple of things that I do that I think provide value. So right now they only want one person per room, okay. right? Because like the duplex that I have, each side is only 600 square feet. I mean, it's not huge, on there, right?
Yes, sir.
And so if you had like five people in each room, I mean, I would be spending all my money to get the plumber out there. I mean, the bathrooms would be plugged and the toilets all the time on there.
Yeah.
And so what I've done is since there's a lot of time spent in the rooms, mm-hmm. is I have put desks and chairs because a lot of them are going to be on their laptops and going to be on there. So I want it to be like have like space instead of they're working like on their bed in the smaller areas.
Yes,
the
sir.
Second thing that I do is every month I have my own cleaner come in and clean all of the common areas, like the kitchens and the other things, mm-hmm. because it's still my property. And mm-hmm. even though they're responsible, you don't know what they're going to do or not do. So I want another set of eyes. And then there are times where the maid housekeeper will tell me, the cleaner, that, hey, I saw like four pairs of sneaker outside their door. Because remember, you have to have a lock on each of those doors.
That's
so the
right.
people, I mean, instead of like a key, so that person, they have a code to be able to get in there.
Yeah. That makes sense. Okay.
And so, it's a win-win to be able to do that. Sometimes you have to spend a little extra money in order to preserve your property, which is still yours.
That's actually what was one of my questions, how do they keep it clean? But that answers it right there.
Yeah.
So here's another question, kind of going back a little bit. So fix and flips made you money, but you have to repeat it over and over and over again. But going into rentals, it'll generate cash flow.
100%.
So it might be a little less, but it can preserve a little bit.
And this is, of course, the second part, which is, yes, you're going to have good cash flow, but now you're going to keep the house during the appreciation part.
That's right.
Right.
And the tax benefits.
And the tax benefits.
And you're a CPA, so you know depreciation. Did you ever do 1031s and stuff, or do you usually buy and hold?
Buy and hold down there.
Okay.
And I've been lucky in all my properties. I've just paid cash, so mm-hmm. I haven't had to use a lender in them. And so
do you recommend for those at home, they need to do fix and flips, take that money and preserve it in the assets?
They do.
Yes, sir.
Right. I mean, it's a progression. A lot of people, when they first start, they get into wholesaling because maybe they don't have a lot of money on there, mm-hmm. get some money, then they go to flips, make money. Hopefully they're making money, but they've got to know what they're doing or get a mentor, because mentors are so important in today's world. Then after that, they're in a position where they need to know how to do, you know, rentals.
That's amazing. Yes, sir.
And you know, one thing you and I have talked about, Shane, is to be successful as an investor, you have to really start grasping all the different types of investing. Like I know you do like some lease purchases. Mm-hmm. The more you do, the more exit strategies you can have. Mm-hmm. And there's certain things that sometimes somebody started a flip and guess what? They haven't been able to sell it. It's now becoming a rental property. They have to be able to go and pivot to know how to not lose and make money and mitigate. I used to say when I was doing the flip, making money didn't or nearly make me happy. Mm-hmm. I would take a look, and I used to call it spilled milk. I would take a look at every one of my projects and evaluate, did I maximize my money? If not, what didn't I do that I want to do differently? Mm-hmm. And then if there was a loss coming, mitigate it.
I like that. Spilled milk.
Spilled milk.
Yeah.
And again, like I never mind making a mistake. I don't like making that same mistake.
Over and over.
I'm going to give you an example if that's okay.
Yes, please.
So I had a deal over in East Atlanta and it had a lot of water damage. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is that they did not have any gutters. And so over time, it had created water issues. All right, so I got it fixed, but then I got better when I was looking at properties to see if they had had that or not.
That's right. Yeah, you just learn as you kind of go sometime and not repeat the same mistake.
But I think sometimes people are so happy that they're in or out that they don't think about, okay, what do I want to do better? Because you always have to tweak. You know, I don't know of anybody, or I'll just say myself, that gets it right the first time. And it's not about education. It's about becoming educated so that you start doing better and better and better. Nobody's great when they first start.
And so we bought an apartment complex. And when we went, we looked under, what is it called? The P-trap underneath the sink. They had taped it, glued it. And they sent a guy out there every time, 3-4 times to fix it. And really, the piece for P-trap was like $14. They should have just replaced the whole thing. And spend $60 every time a maintenance guy has to go out there.
It's kind of crazy.
It's amazing,
Because they're not really thinking like how to be better. Most of the successful people we've had lunch is you always want to be better. I always want to be better. And I think if you get to the point that you think you're like at the finish line, it's time you retire, you're 6 feet under, because you, as an entrepreneur, what happens? Let's say you're right here. What happens? You know, you're always keeping moving that finish line you always think, okay, maybe that's not enough. I want to keep doing more and more and more, help more and more people.
No, 100%. Yeah. We learned a lot from your event too, like I said. So I know I'm all over the board going to event and back to real estate, but at your event, it was amazing the type of people that were there. There were, like you said, there were wholesalers, people that were new. A lot of people had those green dots. I was like, man, they're new. That's amazing. And I was just curious, out of one of these events, can you highlight like one amazing opportunity that came out of one of your events for you and for them?
All right, so
a bunch of them, I bet.
There is a lot out there. But my intention at the events is not anything for me. Because my purpose at the events is to help others and connect others. And I'll give you an example. So my friend Will Holdren, who I know I did a podcast with him.
He's amazing.
Right? And so I met him 3 years ago. He was 19 years old. And lived in Pennsylvania, and he told me he was interested in me mentoring him about real estate and investing. And so I started doing that, graduated about a year ago, moved to Atlanta. I was the only person he knew when he moved here. And I said, I'm going to help you. And so started coming to my events and helping me with there. And, you know, he's getting ready to close on his first real estate investment. But how did he get there? So it's important to build a team, right? When you have a company or you're doing this, you can't do it by yourself. So the first person I introduced to him was my friend, Denny, who is also an investor and a realtor who went to show him properties, okay? Who else do you need on the team? You need the property manager who's gonna give you what the rent rates are. So then he got that from her. Then her husband is the one who is the handyman slash contractor who's going in to give the number of what it's going to take to be able to do that property. Now, originally when Will was thinking about it, I said, well, let me just show you a couple of the spreadsheets that I just use for myself. I said, there are two things you've got to learn. First is, do you have enough cash to close this deal? And so I put all the things that he would need. Then the second is, does this property cash flow? And so you need more than one on there, because unless you, doesn't make a difference if you're off and you're a multi-millionaire on there, but especially when you're first doing your job. And so Will got really good at being able, now some of the piece of information he needed from Didi, some he needed from the contractor to be able to do that. And so it's a win for Will because he's excited to be able to do that. It's a win for some of my sponsors. Didi's been sponsored for 5 years. Her husband's been there. Denny, I've known for 10 years and done that. And so I have had multiple deals that everybody who was involved, the lender, the closing attorney, the realtor, contractors, everybody came from Real Estate Connections.
100%. Well, you know, they say that the most happiest people are the people that help others, you know? So whenever I was talking about you getting value out of it, I think that you do get value. Because look how proud you are of William. I mean, you brag on him every time I'm with you, right? And he is a good boy. We just did a podcast earlier. And I mean, it's just like having a son. You know what I mean?
You're so funny. So when Will moved here, like one of the things, I had played tennis for 50 years, then I wanted to get into pickleball. Now, Will's an athlete, number one golfer on the college team, played basketball, but whatever sport he's good at. So we started to play pickleball together. And so when we go to the park, we would go a couple of times a week. People think I'm his father. Okay. I said, okay, thank goodness I think I'm his father, not his grandfather. I'm actually old enough to be his grandfather, rather, but at least father, because people just assume that.
But you look a day over 35. Yeah.
Okay, you got that. Like that.
Yes, sir. Well, I just think that honestly, the interesting thing is one guy told me, he said, Shane, if you're ever feeling down, you know, stressed sometime, or maybe you're depressed or just whatever, you don't have no motivation. He says, just call someone and help one person. Or go and help someone buy some food, whether it be a homeless person or just someone in need. And it gives you that edification. It just helps you feel better. You do that 25 times a day when you reach out to 25 people. I think that's why you have all this energy. You're happy. One of the most positive people I've ever met.
And I say this, you know, I think I told you that I came very close to retiring during the pandemic. Didn't know what was happening with my networking event. And like I said, we have enough coming on our property since we have no debt on any of them. But like, I have way too much energy to be able to like retire. I mean, I'd be bouncing off the walls on there. And so it just gives me so much pleasure to help others. But the other thing that I do is every morning I have a gratitude journal. And I always
say
this. You
told me about that.
I always say this. If you have food in your belly, you have a roof all over your head, and you drink clean water, do you understand the billions of people in the world that would change places? And yet we take for granted, and most people look at what they don't have instead of what they do have. And I've had some people that I mentor, they go, but Peter, I don't have it all. I said, you don't understand gratitude. Gratitude is being grateful for what you have. What you don't have, then you come up with a blueprint to get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so what you focus on expands. So when I start, you know, gratitude, that's what I notice. And before I go to bed, I have a little thing in my mind and I go, all right, start with 10 things I was grateful for during the day. And did my actions say what I wanted them to?
No.
And so it's kind of a like report card for myself to keep myself accountable. I don't need anybody else to do that. At the end of the day, I'm going to be the hardest critic on Peter is me.
No, absolutely. I love that. Now, switching back over, because I know I'm going back and forth. Are you consistently growing your portfolio, or are you just, what are you doing right now?
So I'm always open to looking for deals, right? And I always say, as an investor, I don't fall in love with the property. It's the numbers, right?
That's right.
Because it's not your own personal property. There might be some things that you want for the comfort of your home, but as an investor, you have to make money or it becomes a hobby and not a business for you. So you might want to do 10 things, but you only can do 5. And so I'm always looking at deals, and whether it's for me or for other people to help.
No, absolutely. I think that's great. And then let's see, whenever you are dealing with like, because I know that how you nurture relationship directly with people. What about whenever it's in the professionals? For example, with bankers, you do have to make, a lot of people don't know this, but you need to build a relationship with the banks, loan officers, insurance people, like everything. Can you explain a little bit about that?
So years ago, I was in BNI, which is a large like networking group. It's like Power Corp. They're all the same. Yeah. And so the concept they have is talking about spheres of influence. And spheres of influence, just use, let's say if you were buying a house, as one customer, you might need the realtor, you need the lender, the attorney, insurance, all these different people that you're going to need. And so as a business person, whether you're, doesn't make a difference what type of investing you're doing, you've got to develop good relationships with your bankers, the attorneys, contractors, all these folks that are going to help you. And I would tell somebody, even if you don't need money on this deal, or even if you have a go-to person, as an investor, you never have enough money sources.
That's right.
Never say no to meeting with a banker.
That's right.
Because you don't know, sometimes your source dries up, or you know, for one reason or another, they don't want to have X amount of deals. And so you just always have to keep that going. And building relationships is important personally and professionally.
So here's a random question. I meant to ask you this the other day. When I left you, me and you had lunch the other day, and I left and I said, man, I felt like I learned a lot. I know I'm more of an introverted person. I'm not as extroverted.
I'm not an introvert? Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So I'm trying to be more extroverted, get out of my comfort zone. All my mentors, including you, said, you got to get out there and meet people. And I've heard, and I was very happy about it. But when I left, I said, I wonder, what does Peter do about toxic people?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I love to hear, how do you handle a toxic person in your life?
All right, so that's probably one of my favorite questions.
Okay, good.
All right, so my philosophy is I love everybody, I don't like everybody.
I love that.
Okay. Now, I'm going to use a football analogy.
Okay.
If you're going to be in my inner circle, you have to be a positive, like-minded person. Mm-hmm. If you're toxic, I will love you, but you go on the sideline. I will not have anybody close to me, because one bad apple can destroy the energy in a workplace or anything else. And I'm going to give you an example without using names, because So I had this lady who I was friends with for many years. Mm-hmm. And she started to go through some stuff that to me was out of integrity. And so I'm the type of person where I don't let things slide under the rug. And I was, and she knew I've used that football analogy of sidelines. And I just said to her, I'm going to just say Mary, that's not her name. You know, Mary, I love you, but you don't get to play in this game anymore. But I want you to know, when you start and show me more integrity, not intentions, but actions, you have an opportunity to come back on the playing field. Mm-hmm. And about 4 years later, she called me. She said, Coach put me back in. And we sat down and we talked about it. And she said to me, I didn't need you to tell me I was out of integrity. I knew I was. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at you, it reminded me how much out of integrity. So sometimes we think when somebody does something, it's about us. It's not. It's when you put a mirror in front of somebody, if they don't like it, it has nothing to do with you. It's all about them.
That's right.
And she said, I had to work on myself because I really missed being around you. And so every day I remind myself that was my, you know, one of my goals to get there. And now she's back in, and it's probably been 5 or 6 years, and we laugh about it. Although when I told her that, we were at my Dunkin' Donuts with everybody, she started to cry hysterically. Yeah. Now, I mean, like, people were looking at us like, what's going on?
Are they breaking up or something?
But here's what I know is, after years of personal development, I don't tell somebody to stop crying. Like, you have to let people feel what they feel.
That's why.
And I was clear in my mind. And she said to me that I made her cry. And I said, okay, that might be your truth, but let me tell you what my truth is. This is the mirror.
Yeah.
You looked in and you didn't like what you saw. It had nothing to do about me. Later on, like when she came back the second time, she said, I thought about that and you were right. I didn't want to see it.
That's right. So with that kind of person, you feel like it's very important to communicate now.
100%. See, you have to set boundaries with people. Mm-hmm. And when I said that, I didn't come from a place of being in my head and being condescending and being, you know, critical and trying to make myself right. I came from a place of love that it wasn't good for her. It was not good for me.
Absolutely.
But I never closed the door on people. I always let them know the door is open once you get back in integrity with me.
That's right. No, I love that. That's great. All right. One final question then.
Okay.
Well, it might turn into 10 more. Who knows? But whenever you have a challenge come, how do you make, like, you know, emotional, like you was talking about her being emotional. Whenever you have a challenge coming, you have all these stresses, worry, how do you handle that? Like, do you have to step back and meditate? Do you have to, or do you go to mentors, or do you go to peers? Like, what do you do?
Okay, love that question too. Okay. So I have a big thing on my desk. It says faith, not fear. See, faith and fear are two emotions that are based on the future, right? Mm-hmm. And so I always say, for 64 years, God has taken care of me. Why would I think all of a sudden he isn't? Sometimes, or a lot of times, his plan is bigger and better than mine on there. And so It's more of it's a glass half empty or half full. And so if I'm stressed or I'm not feeling, a lot of times what I'm doing is projecting instead of letting it be.
Okay.
And so one of the things that I always do when, whether it's stress or I'm just, even if I'm angry or any of that stuff, is I go to my gratitude and I start reminding myself. But I also have one thing, I call it the 60-minute, one-hour rule. Would you like to hear what
that
is?
I want to hear what it is.
Okay. So there are times that people do stuff that would just piss you off, right? I mean, just
it's true.
Okay?
It's true.
If that happens, I go to my phone and I put the timer 1 hour. I let myself for 1 hour be mad and angry or whatever that is. When it's done, it's like, boom, I let it go. And the reason I do that is you've heard me say my personal mission statement is every day I will positively affect as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. So if I'm from the anger, it's counterproductive to what my mission statement for myself is. And a lot of times it can just start multiplying and you don't even know why you're mad and angry anymore. You're just in that state. And so I want to do so many good things that I'm not taking my eye off the ball. I don't get stuck in the dirt. I go for the gold. I'm very clear. But if I need that hour just to be whatever, I do it. I get it out of my system. I move on.
That's neat. You actually put a limit to let your time run its course. That,
yeah,
that,
yeah.
Those feelings. I like that.
Yeah,
actually.
Because if not, you just it's easy to drag on, and it's an hour, and it's a day, and it's a week, and all of a sudden you
you're
get
paralyzed.
To point nine. Yeah,
yeah.
You don't even remember sometimes what you're even upset about. And so I just, I have way too much I want to do to help other people. And when I think about all the joy and things I can do for others, usually it's so minute that somebody has done something that I just, that hour is gone, boom, move on.
Oh, wow. Well, I do have one more final question.
Okay. Because
it'll keep adding on. I just want to make sure that the people at home, and honestly myself, I love learning from you. Like, if you were to start over, you come all the way back, let's just say you're, I'm mid-30s, so I'm mid-30s. And let's just say I'm stuck as a CPA. And I say, Peter, what is the next steps? What do I do? What would be like 3 to 5 steps? You say, Shane, like, for example, find a mentor, get knowledge, do this. Like, what would you say?
So the first thing I would say is sit down and try to get clarity of what you want. Okay. See, I'm going to use a real estate kind of analysis here.
Okay.
You're building a new home. The first thing you do is go get an architect, because if you don't get that architect, the chances of your home looking the way you want to are small. So when you're trying to figure out what your future is, the first thing, you have to have some clarity of what that's going to look like in order to figure out what you need. Like if you're here and you're here and want to get here, I'm good at figuring out what the next steps are. So the first thing is journal. Like, I love to journal. I have the worst handwriting, and a lot of times I can't remember my own handwriting, but I get it out on paper and it just feels better. Okay.
Yes.
And so get some clarity of what that is.
Okay.
The second thing, and especially for people who are younger, but this is really for people all age, a mentor is important. Now, when you're looking for a mentor, the best mentor is going to be somebody who has what you want. Look at somebody. It's not what they say, because I think sometimes you have all these so-called gurus, but they're not, that's not what you want. So you want to find somebody like Will would tell you that he picked me because he wants to be me.
Yeah.
Yes. And so the good part about that is I got the blueprint of, like, if he's trying to get there, or you pick a mentor that does what you want to do,
you have the experience to show
them. They're going to give you the blueprint on there. So that's I think that's next. Now, in any type of partnership, whether it's personal, professional, you get a mentor, you have to figure out if it's going to be long-term, both sides have to get something out of it. And so for some people, they go, I don't have money. All right, you don't have money. You go to that person, and it could be, you could give them time. You could shadow them. It's more than just money.
It is.
And for some people, it is money. And so you have to figure out, like, what that is if you want them to give them your time on there. And I would say after a mentor, it's really building and nurturing those relationships. Now, sometimes you're not sure who to do that with. But my experience is good people are good people, and there are changes in your life that you don't know. And sometimes you're not even sure like what you might do with that person, but somehow, you know, it shows itself that you were supposed to do something with that person.
Absolutely. I think that's great. And he's giving gold here. I really love it. It's very good. I love the architect thing. You answered everything really good, Peter. We'll cut that part out. I just wanted to give you a compliment.
I appreciate that.
But it was really good.
I always have stories. Like if you give me, like people go, how much time do you need? I'm like, whatever you give me, I will work around. If you give me 10 minutes, I'll talk 10 minutes. You give me an hour, I'm an hour. I mean, I'm never short of stories when I get started.
No, I love it. I just want to make sure, what else? Is there anything else? I'm new to podcast. But you've answered everything so eloquently. I'm like, man, I just feel like my glass is almost full. So I'm trying to think of other questions to ask.
Man, it's 45 minutes long. So
I want to go another. Let's go a little bit longer. So I'd love to. I'd love to hear about. Like I could talk real estate stuff, but honestly, I've enjoyed some of the mindset stuff. That's the thing that I really am trying to get out. So I'm getting a free mentorship out of this.
Here's what's so interesting.
Yes, sir.
When people started asking me to mentor them, what I really thought, and again, it's mostly younger people, but I mean, it doesn't have to be. What I thought they wanted from me was real estate investing. And what I find is that's such a little piece. Because it starts with mindset and things that, like, my parents taught me, that a lot of people come from a single parent or different, and they never learned. Like, for me, I would take for granted what good manners are or different things on there. And so a lot of it is different teachings. What's integrity? What is trust? How to be successful? I mean, it's a whole litany of different things. And I'll tell you one thing. One of the things, and Austin, you're going to see this when I come a week teach this class. So you can't answer this question and stuff because you're going to know the answer and stuff. One of the things I make sure people do, like if they want a second appointment with me, I'm okay. I don't charge, but I want them to like get value, is I make them do a budget.
A budget, yeah.
So you want to do a little exercise here?
Yeah,
I'm going to do this with your people. Again, Austin, I'm going to have to slap your hand if you do this. All right. I'm going to say a word. Yeah. And the first word I say, I want you to tell me what you're thinking of.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
Okay.
Budget.
Money.
Okay. Yeah. And you might be different than most, but I follow up with, when you hear the word budget, do you have a positive connotation or you feel like controlling and you don't like that word?
I think budget is discipline. So I think discipline, I think budget is crucial. And I think that's kind of the things I think of. I don't think it was negative. I think it's necessary.
Okay. All right. Now let's reverse roles here.
Okay.
So I want you to say budget. And I want you to hear what the word I say, and then I'm going to explain why I say that.
Okay,
most people, they look at me like, you're crazy. Yes, I'm crazy, but not for the reason you think I'm crazy. Okay, okay. Let's go.
Yeah, yes, okay. All right. So budget.
Freeing.
Freeing.
Freeing. Okay. Now, let me explain why it means freeing to me. You can't make good decisions if you don't know how much money you need to live. And for some people, like, they have no idea. They have credit card debt. They have this stuff. And they get a bill, they pay, it comes, then they get near the end of the month, they have no money left. And so for me to be proactive, and like when I make them do that, they have some aha moments. So the number one thing is when they see where they spend most money, which the biggest surprise is eating out.
They have no idea.
So I'm like, look, let's say you're looking to do something different, whether it's a different job, investing, fill in the blank. You can't make good decisions if you don't know how much your rent is, how much your car payment is, your insurance, all the different things. And so how can you decide to do something when you have no idea of the numbers you need to figure out what the next best step is you?
That's right.
And and I'm like, look, for me, I am the least judgmental person you're ever going to meet. Like, you don't know my life story, which is a whole other story and different things. All the things I've gone through. Like anybody who I know has been successful, nobody's life goes like this. Yeah, the most successful people, when they have the challenges, they figure out, you know, what they can do in order to have a positive success. And they use that as an impetus to do something bigger or better. Mm-hmm. And so in order to make good decisions, if you don't know the money you need and you're worried about my car's going to be repossessed or my lights are going to be turned off, it's going to put a lot of stress. And so
it does.
Like, instead of worrying about what could happen, for me, like, it's always a projection. Why don't you figure out what is going to happen? And so you can make decisions of what to do next.
100%. Yeah. It's really scary, actually. I think that, because I was going to be a doctor. I was my dad.
You're smart. Career. Oh my God.
No. He's smart. I'm not smart. In fact, I was struggling even to get my biology. Mm-hmm. But it's just my dad's Korean, and they're like doctor, lawyer. You know,
yeah.
He talks like Jackie Chan. And you know, going through high school, going through a little bit of college, and I stepped out on my. I was a month away from getting my associate, and I stepped out and walked away, and I started teaching karate because you know Taekwondo because my dad. He was as stereotypical as an Asian can get. He teach karate, you know. But that's what I grew up seeing my dad do, and I started doing a Taekwondo school. And as I started getting to the thing of budget and I got to pay rent. Not only did I have my own house rent, car payment, insurance, food. I've got my Taekwondo school. I got to pay rent and this. I was like, man, they did not teach me that in school.
Yeah. And so that's why I'm teaching younger people mm-hmm. of how to do that. And then I want to take a look at it. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, what did you learn from this? And again, and here's the other thing I make them do. Get 6 months of their bank statements or their debit cards. Most people mm-hmm. are using that because there's some stuff that you don't pay monthly. It could be a quarterly insurance and stuff like that.
Exactly.
But don't you want to take a look and go, you know, maybe I'm not going out Saturday night for the drinks and different things. I might need to buy food and cook more. I mean, and then all of a sudden you have more control and just it makes you feel better and less stressful.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's another thing too. Is this is a nerdy thing. Whenever
I'm a nerd, so
yeah. When I got into real estate and I was doing my Taekwondo schools, I was like, okay, I'm making this much money. I'm good. Let's just pretend it's $10,000 a month. I'm cash. I said, I'm good. But then it hit me. One mentor said, Shane, you're not good. You might be making $10,000 now after debts, but one day you're going to get married. You're going to want to have a house. You're going to have a kid. Those are future policies that are going to hit your life. And I started casting, wait a minute, I am underwater. And I'm okay right now. But as the timeline goes on, if I stay consistent where I'm at and don't continually grow,
100%.
I'm underwater. And no one taught me that. That guy told me that. And it just like little tweaks like that and like little gems I've taken from you changed my life.
So the other thing that I explain after people are like starting to get a little bit, I go, okay, so what did you accrue for your vacations? Now they're looking at me. Like, what is? I'm like, look, there's some stuff that's down to 6 months. Do you want to take a vacation? Great. Right. How much do you think that's going to be? $5,000, $10,000, $15,000? Mm-hmm. If you're not saving part of that, you're not going to be like, there's different cash flow for monthly. But there's other stuff if you want to do, you got to start saving or putting that in, or you're not going to be able to do some of the other things.
That's right. And prepare for retirement and prepare for future.
Or, you know, I always use this. So many people live from paycheck to paycheck. And I remember a couple of years ago when the government shut down. And then we shut down for, I think, 2 weeks. How many people it caused a problem because they didn't have enough money to do that. And I remember, you know, when I used to finance many like startup businesses, one of the things I would take a look at the budget and I would go, okay, how many months can you go without a paycheck? Because the burn rate, like how much expenses do you have coming here that you're not going to be able to take money out? Can you do it for 6 months, 12 months, 18? You've got to know ahead of time what that number is.
100%.
But if you haven't done it, you don't know what you don't know. Somebody has to have that expertise to go, wait a minute, those numbers look okay, but they're not finished because you're missing a few things here.
Yeah. So online, you know, because everyone's watching TikTok and YouTube and they say, oh, you make money, but they don't teach how to preserve it and prepare for the worst.
That's where being CPA and president of a bank can help. Like I understand the cash flow and how to make money, how to preserve money and how to be happy. But that's the thing is, you never get to the finish line, especially if you're an entrepreneur. You have to enjoy the process because, and you have to be able to celebrate small victories because it could 100%. Take, and if you don't, then it's easy to quit because you think I'm never going to get there.
That's right. Yeah, so we did Taekwondo schools, and I remember telling you. So, you know, but there's white belt and then black belt's the end. So we're with the kids and we're saying, yeah, black belt is your goal, but let's get the yellow belt, then orange.
And celebrate.
And celebrate. It's a win. It's a new journey. It's a new thing. Then when they get the green belt, they get a black uniform. Then they get a little one. Then they get weapons. And we're here to motivate. And don't worry about black belt. But that is your goal. But you need to enjoy the journey there.
That's it.
100%. So I just wonder, where can everyone find you online, by the way? Instagram, Facebook?
I'm on all of those. The easiest thing on Facebook is use my name. It's Peter Pasternak, P-A-S. Are we going to have something that has like written stuff on there? So yeah, they're going to have
we'll put your links below
on there. Mm-hmm. And especially in the real estate world, once I accept your friend request, I will give you an invitation to the closed real estate connection group with 21,000 people. I'm on LinkedIn with my name. Also on Instagram, it's my name on there. And I don't have a common last name, Pasternak. So there's not like you run and there's like hundreds and hundreds on there. And if you're here, especially locally, come to Real Estate Connection. The first Tuesday of every month, I'm in West Midtown at Dr. Scoffo. It's the third Tuesday. I'm in Alpharetta at Mercantile Social. And you're never going to get good until you practice. And if you're an introvert, even if you're not, doesn't mean you're an extrovert, you're going to be good at networking. You have to come and practice, and you can come up and meet me. And I'm always happy to do one-on-ones with people, help people. Or if you're there, kind of go over in the moment what you are doing, and especially if it's not right, please don't do that. I'll explain what you should be doing. And again, each time you will get better at it.
You know, a lot of people ask, where do you find a mentor? And this is it. Mentor right here that'll go. So they get to meet you at that Dunkin' Donuts.
Exactly, because it goes one after another after another. And David's had the pleasure, if I've had the pleasure of spending a couple one-on-ones.
Well, Pete, I just want to thank you for coming to my house and doing this podcast with me. We're going to have an event December 6th and 7th. And you're going to be the first speaker to tell everyone how to get the most out of the event.
I will. And you know I'll be packed with action, and I'm going to be excited to be there. And at the end of the day, talk about how people can maximize the time that they're there so that at the end, not only did they get what they wanted, but they're going to get even more.
100%. Thank you, sir, for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.